This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, 7:07, Tuesday, the 2nd of August, on a rather, I think, going to rain day. this is, of course, the morning run. You're listening to Wong Xiaoning together with Philip C. Now, in about 30 minutes, we'll be speaking to Dr. Adrian Ang of the S.S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies on the visit by U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to Asia Pacific and that purported might be trip to Taiwan. But let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
U.S. markets on Monday closed on the red. The Dow was down 0.1%, S&P 500 down 0.3%, Nasdaq down 0.2%. On the flip side, Asian markets were all green. The Nikkei was up 0.7%, Hang Seng marginally up 0.05%, Shanghai Composite up 0.2%, Singapore's STI up 0.9%, and back home, FBM KLCI was up 0.7%.
So for some answers on where markets are heading, we speak to Joel Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Good morning, Joel. Always good to speak to you. Now, U.S. markets definitely snapped a three-day rally after hawkish comments by Fed officials and data showing that the manufacturing sector slowed down. Does this, however, leave markets in a limbo as to what direction to take?
It does. I mean, July was a great month for the markets. If you're in the market, you did well. But, you know, August is a new month. August, September are pretty choppy and volatile. So, you know, don't base the future on July because it was a good month. But there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And the PMIs in the U.S. and really globally, China, Europe, they're rolling over. So I think when it comes to the global slowdown or global recession, the worst is yet to come. Having said that, a lot of this bad news is being priced into equity. So we're building a bottom, but we're not there just yet.
So, Joe, you say that maybe the bottom is somewhat there, but what else is keeping you awake at night, actually, in terms of markets? What are you keeping your eye out in terms of negative news?
Well, you know, so far, you know, earnings season has been okay. A lot of companies have been able to pass on a lot of these costs. But honestly, the U.S. consumer is rolling over. The U.S. consumer is tired of inflation. They're pulling back. And this is at the high end, high incomes and the low incomes, paying more for basic staples, traveling less, pulling back on spending. So, you know, we could be entering the holiday season in a really cranky mood here because inflation is wearing on people. And people, as I said, households, high income, low income, they're pulling back. And if the U.S. consumer pulls back, then we've got bigger issues to deal with, not only in the United States, but globally. That's what keeps me awake, the U.S. consumer.
So then are there any opportunities in value or cyclicals then?
Yeah, we still like, I mean, believe it or not, we still like energy, because even if energy prices come back to like $80 a barrel, these companies are hugely profitable, and they've had a nice run. Renewables have gotten a good bounce. We still like aerospace and defense. So there's places to work in technology. I've said this over and over on your show. Anytime there's a pullback in technology, U.S. big tech, buy it because they're on sale. And you saw how well they did through earnings season.
Yep.
Okay. Joe, but I'm curious about, you know, in terms of asset allocation, if we are worried about the U.S. consumer, which of course has an impact globally, what are the other assets that we should consider other than equities? Is there any?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, if you're retail, no. I mean, there's not much. I mean, there's cash, fixed income, and, you know, equities. But some of our clients are looking at, like, farmland or, like, alternative investments, private equity. You know, that's becoming more customized and commercialized, but it's not there just yet. But, you know, within the equities, there's some good value there, you know, across the sectors. We're looking more carefully at the emerging markets as well. We're not there yet. Health, life sciences companies in Europe, robotics in Japan. So it's a very stock sector specific global market that you have to wade yourself through.
And Joe, the Nasdaq Golden Dragon China Index is down 20% for the year, making it one of the worst performing indices. Why aren't investors interested in U.S. Chinese stocks? Is the prognosis for them that bearish?
I think maybe it's that bearish, but, you know, maybe on the other hand, if you're going to put a dollar to work tomorrow, you just buy big, large cap U.S. companies. You know, you know you can get your money in and out. You trust the transparency, you know, the accounting. And, you know, I mean, China's economy is basically flatlining, right? In Q2, growth is basically flat. So they got a lot of work to do. There's worries about the property market. There's problems there. There's worries about, you know, unemployment, particularly among younger workers. So there, you know, China's not out of the woods just yet. And I think the kind of, if you're going to choose between China tech and U.S. tech, it's an easy call here now. It's more U.S. I still like China tech for the long term, but if I had to put a dollar work tomorrow, it'd be in the U.S., not China.
I'm also curious about jobs, Joe, because, you know, of course, the mandate of the Fed is to have full employment. And we did see that. But also recently, results season did point to some big tech companies saying, hey, we're going to slow down the hiring if stopping at all. Is this the sign of things to come?
I think actually a backup in the U.S. unemployment rate would, you know, that's bad news, but that's bad news. That's good news for equities. I know that's convoluted. That's how the markets work. But if we see a backup slightly in the unemployment rate here in the United States, whether it's tech, industrials, you know, mortgage bankers, you know, and so forth, you're going to start to see that. But like, I think that's kind of alleviates this inflationary pressure. So the bad news is good news. And I, you know, that's convoluted when it comes to the markets, but you know, the markets are just weird. They have their own way of thinking, but I think that if we get a backup in unemployment, that's exactly what the Fed wants. And we still have at least 10 million job openings. We get the JOLTS report, I think, tomorrow.
Yeah.
We still have 10 million job openings. So, you know, everyone from Malaysia should come to the U.S. or vice versa, because we need workers. We got lots of jobs, high end and low end.
So no, you have to come to Malaysia and be our presenter in BFM. What are you talking about?
Well, if Nancy wasn't there, I'd come. No, I'm kidding. the global shortage of workers, it's just that it's global in nature. So any backup here alleviates that wage pressure that companies are dealing with.
So what are your expectations when the JOLT and jobless claims numbers are released this week? And JOLT here means U.S. job openings, right, by industry?
Right.
So what are your expectations? Right. Is it still going to be a shortage of workers?
Yeah, I think there'll be a slight deterioration in both numbers. So like the JOLTS number will come down. It'll still be above 10 million. And I do expect a mild bump up in unemployment, mild, because we're at full employment. But that's good news, right? I mean, it's counterintuitive. So if we get a really, you know, continued tight labor market in the United States, that keeps the heat on the Fed to be hawkish and be more aggressive. So I'd rather see a bump up, slight bump up in unemployment, JOLTS number come down, because that means that the tightening is working, the economy is slowing, more labor slack, less wage pressure, and we begin again.
And hence then be a near peak hawkishness then?
That's a good question. I mean, I can't figure out this Fed, I'll be honest with you, because for Jay Powell to suggest that we're neutral, I mean, we're nowhere neutral. I mean, not with the we got the CPI above 9%, still very red hot, and to suggest that we're close to neutral. But I will say this, quantitative tightening, this is a big issue. The money supply in the United States, year-over-year growth, is crashing. It's going negative. Quantitative tightening in September, $95 billion coming out. So the tightening conditions in the United States, now we're, you know, the rubber meets the road here. This is going to really get tight. So maybe that alleviates and sets us up for a Fed that's done by the fourth quarter, and then you've got this late year-end rally, and then we set the stage for more upside in 23.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, giving us his views on the market and his main thing. Watch the U.S. consumer. If they stop spending, not only will the U.S. economy be affected, but I think global economy will be affected as well.
And the prelude to the U.S. consumer is the employment reports, the job levels. If you're saying like 10 million job openings, we might see that reduce in the coming months or weeks ahead as we see employment levels soften, labor markets a bit softer as we move into a softening demand piece. So it's a cycle, isn't it? The consumption, demand, and the employment levels here.
Well, I've even seen reports that for the U.S. actually to stop their inflationary, or at least slow down the pace of inflation, unemployment, you need to actually see unemployment hit like 10 million people, which is a bit of a shocker, because you want to basically cool down demand, right? Because that's what has been causing inflation in the U.S. But turning our attention to U.S. results, actually, Pinterest, their reported results, so their share price actually jumped after market hours because they reported better than expected user numbers, even though earnings and revenue missed estimates, and the company gave weak guidance for the third quarter.
I haven't used Pinterest for ages, but
I don't even know how to use it. So I'm going to be one of the aunties in the room. I have seen it. It's quite cute. You can see all these nice pictures.
Well, I think that's why it's translated in the numbers, right? Global monthly active users has decreased 5% year on year to 433 million. And although this sort of drop off is alarming for a social media app, analysts were expecting a steeper decline to 431 million, which really talks about all expectations, isn't it?
But I also wonder whether the share price is up because Elliott Investment Management, which is a big, big fund house, they confirmed a major stake, saying they approved of the company's leadership. And I don't know whether that's a sign of confidence in terms of this company, but revenue did grow. I mean, it did grow 9% year on year to $666 million, but it's extremely, extremely competitive. And they aren't the only ones that actually miss top and bottom line. Similar, like social media players like Meta, Twitter, Snap, all reported bad numbers.
Yeah, I think the expectation is that this current quarter will also not be that good. The third quarter revenue expected to grow mid-single digits on a year-on-year basis, below analyst projections for sales growth of 12.7%.
So the street doesn't like it that much. There's only 9 buys, 22 holds, and 1 sell. Consensus target price for this stock, $25.57. Current share price, this is of course not after hours, but this is at the close of market. The share price was at $20, was up 51 cents. Now, another company, interestingly, that reported, and I think this is whether you want to call it a reopening stock, is Avis. So Avis budget second quarter revenue, EBITDA and net income reached their highest in the company's history, thanks to higher quarter demand and strong pricing. Revenue rose 37% year on year to $3.2 billion. Wow, this is a tale of really two halves, right? Pre-COVID, a company like this, everyone thought was going to close down, and now they're reporting better than ever numbers.
The best quarter revenue in company's history. The net income also reached a record high of $774 million, while adjusted EBITDA on the Americas was $1.2 billion. These results naturally beat Wall Street expectations, as earnings per share came to $15.94 per share, while analysts were expecting $12.22.
So, you know what I love about this stock? Guess what the ticker is on Bloomberg? It's CAR, C-A-R. So apt for this company, right? But, you know, not much coverage on this stock. There's only 6 analysts that do cover it. 1 buy, 4 holds, 1 sell. Consensus target price for this is $205. The stock price is $181. It was actually down 94 cents. But I wonder whether tomorrow, when US markets open, or later tonight for them, whether there'll be more coverage and probably maybe more upgrades on the back of this good news. But up next, we'll be speaking to Shukrin Ma from TNB on the power outage last Wednesday. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.